This is the UK House Builder and Developer from Good to Great series with Gerard Ball, Managing Director of Human Capital Group, helping you build your UK house building teams and businesses fast. We find the top 15% of talent in the market by harnessing the power of big data, 24/7, 365 digital automation platforms, and inbound strategies, leveraged by 20 years successful mid to senior level recruitment experience.
Today, Gerard chats to Steve Errington, MD of Yorkshire-based house builder Stonebridge Homes, which he joined in 2018 after leading his previous firm, Story Homes, from a £26 to a £250 million turnover business within 6 years. In this interview, Steve discusses many of the lessons he learned from heading a business through such explosive growth and how he is bringing them to Stonebridge, for which he has similar aspirations with targets to expand it from 150 to a 1,000 unit business. Discipline, communication and goal clarity feature high on Steve's lists of musts, along with succession planning, staff development, getting the right person for the job and attracting new talent to the industry.
Hi Steve, fantastic to be talking to you. How are you
great
doing?
Great to be here talking to you, Gerard. Yeah, I'm great.
Cool. Right, let's jump straight into this interview. But let's just start at the beginning. You know, how did you end up in house building?
By an accident, really, which was I was approached out of the blue by a headhunter for a position at George Wimpey Northeast, and it was basically, as I found out later, after I got the job, I was actually the fourth FD in 3 years. I guess I always wanted to work in business because I qualified as a chartered accountant with Deloitte, or what was right. Touche Ross back then. I'm showing my age. but I always saw the profession as a route into business, and it was very much a business qualification, my chartered accountancy.
Right. Okay. So did you go straight in as finance director?
Well, I was finance director of actually the housing operations division of Home Group first. So that was my first job outside of the profession. So I was in Home Group, and I picked up the social housing piece. I was FD of that, and I also had the commercial arm and the land development arm as part of that role as well. So I was fairly happy where I was, actually, but I got approached about this job. I didn't really know a lot about house building, to be honest. It's odd, you know, and the more you spend in house building, the more you realize we're the world's sort of best kept secret in terms of industries. I knew nothing about it. So the guy piqued my interest. I did a load of research on house building in the UK and George Wimpey as a business, and it really intrigued me. I mean, I think the first thing about the industry which is fascinating is this whole piece around your raw material, land, getting planning permission, a huge demand supply imbalance, no as yet foreign competition. It's almost a unique set of circumstances surrounding the business. And the more I looked at it, the more I thought this has really got quite a lot of challenges, and it felt really interesting, a really interesting change in my career. So while I wasn't unhappy, I just saw this as a great opportunity.
Good. If you don't mind me asking, how many years ago was that? You sound quite young.
2006.
So right, okay.
15 years.
15 years ago. So look, coming from outside of the industry sector, and you've obviously worked your way up from the bottom. You know, how did you find the industry?
I mean, I got a little bit of a shock, I'm going to be honest, because you go into a PLC. You know, obviously George Wimpey, prior to the merger with Taylor Woodrow, was one of the big four builders back in 2006 in the UK, and I really expected to go in there and see great IT systems, you know, real customer focused business. And you know, it wasn't, you know, the IT systems were like something out of the ark, and that isn't a criticism of George Wimpey. That was an industry-wide issue at the time, and of course we've all come a long way since then. But I was quite surprised, you know, and I thought I'm going to have a hell of a learning curve. But actually, I didn't find it that bad. I found the whole industry fascinating, and I immersed myself in how the industry works, the end-to-end house building process. And I thought it was fantastically challenging, but actually quite relatively easy to make an impact, because I think in some ways it was a little bit sleepy back then.
How did you integrate with the other disciplines, you know, like the construction director or the commercial director, sales director? What was your introduction to those? Because quite often they're quite different personalities.
Yeah. They are, and to be honest, I went in as finance director. As I said, I was the fourth finance director in 3 years, so clearly it was a function that wasn't in a great place. So initially I went in and I fixed the finance function, basically put some real discipline back into the function and improved the performance reporting and the quality of the management information, including the group reporting piece. So I did that fairly quickly. And then I'm fascinated by business. I saw finance as a means to an end. So I really wanted to learn the business. And the best way to learn the business was to really spend time with the guys in each of the functions. So spend time on site with the production director, spend time with the sales director, the commercial director, the land director, the technical director. And I really immersed myself and help them. But you could do that with finance, because finances, you're pretty much, nothing's is off limits in finance, because everything ultimately has an impact in your role as a finance director. So for me, it's like a green card into the whole business. But I think the way that you blend with and make yourself seen as a useful rather than a nuisance is to be useful to them. So try and help them achieve their aims, right, and support them.
Okay.
When I went in, my boss, who was a great guy called John Taylor, he'd only been in the business a couple of years, and he inherited a little bit of a mess, to be honest. Right. And he was turning it round. So I think there was a huge willingness, both from my boss and from my fellow colleagues on the management team, that we all had to improve together.
Right.
So I was pushing an open door, really.
Right. And then after Taylor Wimpey, did you move on to Story Homes afterwards? Is that
I
right?
Did. I mean, we came through the recession, and we luckily, because we closed a third of the offices, we were one of the offices that survived, thank God, off the back of 2008. And I went on to the Taylor Wimpey Senior Leadership Training, which they hold every 5 years, and in 2010, and this was at Warwick Business School, and it ran over about a 6 month period, and it was brilliant training. But there really wasn't many opportunities for promotion. You know, I really wanted to be an MD, really because they'd restructured the business just effectively 12 to 18 months prior to that. So they were pretty much set as a business. And I got approached again by a headhunter about a role with Story Homes. And it was an opportunity to help a smaller business, which was based in Cumbria. It was about 100 to 150 houses a year at the time, 26 million turnover, 4 to 5 sites. And it was a chance to go in, and had real ambitions for growth. And I had a chance to get an early MD role in a young business with ambition. And I was quite sad to leave Taylor Wimpey, but I think I left at the right time for me. I was kicking my heels a little bit as an FD.
Right. Okay.
So it was a great opportunity.
What was the, in terms of stepping up to becoming a managing director within a smaller business, was it what you thought it would be when you moved across?
It was. I mean, the big difference between being, if you like, an MD in a small SME house builder and being MD in a division of a PLC volume national builder like Taylor Wimpey is effectively, in a small business, the MD is effectively setting the strategy and the vision for the business. Right. You know, I was working with my boss, Fred Story, who initially was CEO and then he moved up to chairman after 12 months. But pretty much I had a chance to shape the strategy of the business, shape the vision for the business, really, you know, create a new house type range and really get the business off on a new strategy. And for me, that was really exciting. Whereas you're more of a general manager, and I'm not being derogatory because it's very challenging roles, an MD in a division of a UK national, but it's a different type of job, really.
Right.
I really enjoyed that. It was very, very different challenge because it was, how do we get the business fit for growth? You know, small builders, you don't have necessarily the same disciplines that you have in a Taylor Wimpey in terms of how you, the operating framework and how you manage the business. So I got huge learning from my time at Taylor Wimpey. And I was able to take, if you like, the best of their operating framework, commercial controls, discipline around the land buying process, what makes an efficient house type in a house type range. And I basically applied that in the context of an SMT with a very different culture. It was a very entrepreneurial culture. It was quite a dynamic culture, actually.
Did you find that step from finance director to managing director, was that a sharp learning curve?
No, it wasn't, because I was very, very operational, and it was very much a number two to my MD at Taylor Wimpey.
Right.
So I was kind of already immersed in helping to run the business day to day, particularly around kind of how we deliver our performance targets, delivering the business plan, producing the business plan. I was very much very, very hands-on in terms of supporting the MD at TW. So I didn't find it a huge transition to, if you like, to run it on my own.
Right. Okay.
So it was, I felt I was ready for it, and I felt my grounding at TW was really strong. And because I'd really immersed myself in operations, I felt I was ready to kind of show that I could do it on my own.
Yeah. I'm just curious here in terms of coming in as a discipline director, stepping up to being a managing director. How did you establish your authority, or how did you establish the culture that you wanted Story Homes to follow? Do you remember that happening?
Yeah, I do, actually. And it was a critical element of the first 9 to 12 months, because I had a dynamic culture. I inherited a dynamic culture and a culture where there was a real pride, because it was a quality product that Stories were and are building. And there was a real pride around wanting to do the best for customers and produce a quality product. So and that was the vision that Fred and I had for the business, and that was the strategy we were going to grow the business from. So in that respect, the culture was really well matched, but there was a lack of, I would say, discipline. There was a lack of structure in the business. So the way that I did it was, I basically set a very clear strategy. I set a very clear vision for the business, and I spent a lot of time with my team and through the business, over communicating and being very clear about our requirements were, and being very insistent that we followed the structure that and the processes and systems we were setting up. So it was really about getting the discipline into the business so we could scale up for growth. It wasn't easy, you know. It was a very different way of operating than what had previously been operated in a much smaller business, more entrepreneurial culture, but it was critical. So I really over communicated. I spent a lot of time communicating with my team one-to-one and collectively. We did regular site visits together. Right. So I spent a lot of time repeating all the key messages around where we're going, why we're doing what we're doing. I spent a lot of time explaining why we were changing.
Right.
But I found people bought into it fairly quickly. I think it was really, we weren't changing the soul of the company. We were just getting ourselves ready for growth.
Right. Okay. And then your role within Story Homes, that evolved as well, didn't it, over the 6 years you were there?
It did. I was MD for 12 months, reporting into Fred, who was CEO for 12 months. Effectively, the role was pretty similar, because really Fred was there to check I wasn't going to mess things
right
up in those 12 months, and that I was actually did know what I could walk the talk, so to speak. But in theory, he was really an executive chairman throughout my time at Story. So while the title was different, the job was pretty much the same. I think probably what moving to CEO really meant was there was no confusion either in the business or out the business who was running it day to day. I think when I was MD and Fred was CEO, there was still a confusion over who was the person you speak to.
Right. Okay.
Who's running it day to day. I mean, Fred was always heavily involved in the business, as he should be. But while you've got an MD and a CEO in a single division business, there is a real confusion over who's doing what.
Right. Okay. And that business grew very fast, didn't it?
It did. I mean, we went from about 150 houses to 1,000 houses in about 5.5 years. I'm going to be honest, it was probably a year or two too quick to get to that point. Right. We probably should have done it over 2 extra years. Mm. But it was a whirlwind, really. I mean, we were a 235 million turnover from 26 million turnover, so it's a factor of 10 times bigger.
Right, wow.
We went from about 60 people to 500 people in 5 years.
Right, okay.
And we went from 4 sites to 34 sites in five right. years.
Right, so you're running fast.
It was too fast, if I'm being honest. I think in hindsight, in what we're planning, and we'll come on to a Stonebridge soon, I'm sure, but
yeah,
I think I would have done it in about 2 or 3 extra years, I think, in reality, because the danger with fast growth is making sure the organization stays ahead of it.
Right.
And it's a constant battle to keep the organization ahead of the growth. And then if you don't, it becomes overstretched and it becomes very, very difficult to manage.
Right. Okay. Well, look, I'm sure we're probably going to touch on some of those parts, but what let's talk about Stonebridge now and focus on where the business that you're currently at. What led you to Stonebridge?
I mean, I left Storey Homes, and I wasn't really sure what opportunity I really wanted at that time, because I was thinking about setting up my own house building business, and I was in some discussions with some angel funders at the time. Mm-hmm. And I basically got approached again, a little bit out of the blue, from a recruitment consultant I know very well, actually, about Stonebridge. We're basically looking to bring an MD in to help grow the business, believe it or not, to about 1,000 houses a year as a long-term plan, split over 3 regions, which is ironic, really, because it's exactly what I did at Storeys, which is, I guess, why I was approached. So I got chatting with the business is owned 50% by Darren Stubbs, who set the business up about 10 years ago, and he's got house building in his blood. He's been in house building all his career. Mm-hmm. And Henry Boot PLC. So it's 50% owned by both of those parties. And I guess I was a really good match for them, and they were a really good match for me. They also positioned themselves as a quality builder, this time in Yorkshire as opposed to Cumbria. And they were looking for somebody to help them grow that business again to a much bigger business than what it was now. There was a real commitment to fund the growth from Henry Boots.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. So when you joined, how many units was the business building?
If I was to say it was 150, exactly the same as Storey Homes when I joined.
Right.
Slightly higher turnover. It was about 40 million, about 35 million turnover, which was higher, I suppose years have passed, higher than the Storey Homes turnover. But it was almost identical in terms of staff numbers, size, number of outlets. So pretty much a similar starting point to the beginning of my Storey Homes journey.
And where's Stonebridge at the moment?
We're head officed in Horsforth, which is North Leeds. We've got pretty much a Yorkshire business, but we've actually in the process, we're just working through planning now on 3 sites in the northeast of England, which is the first region for growth. So we're looking to grow, get Yorkshire up to a mature region of probably around 12 or 13 sales outlets, roughly 400 to 500 homes a year in Yorkshire. That's what we're aiming to do.
Yeah.
Similar scale in the northeast. So we'll hopefully in 2022, if things come through planning as we expect, we'll have 3, possibly 4 outlets in the northeast. And we're actually bidding actively for sites in the North Midlands as well now. So we're looking at expanding on 3 fronts, really: home region and 2 new regions.
Right. Okay. So when you joined, what was your first task?
We were a little bit short of land, which is obviously the first thing you have to fix before you can do anything in terms of growing a house builder. So I had really quite a small land bank, which we had to, and Darren really brought me in to help grow that land bank. So we've spent a lot of time growing our land bank. And I guess the first thing I had to do was make sure we had an efficient house type range. So we put in a completely new house type range, which we can scale up to a bigger business. It's very different, and there's a lot more coverage now across the range, so we can bid for bigger sites with it and compete against the big boys. And secondly, the disciplines, which I took straight from Taylor Wimpey and kind of tweaked its stories in terms of how you get plot and efficiency when you're bidding for a new site.
Right. Okay.
So I had to do that first. So we did that fairly quickly, and we've secured a number of sites, which means we're really looking over the next 2 to 3 years to get to roughly 100 million turnover.
Right.
From about 40 million this year.
Okay. And then, you know, when you joined the company, did you go in and think, right, in fact, how did you tell the team what the new goals, what the new targets were, how the company was going to evolve? How did you communicate all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I learned from my Story Homes experience, as you would expect. Basically, what I did, we had some away days as a whole team. So Darren and myself took the whole team off site for a couple of days, and we basically went through. I did an assessment of the business,
yeah,
and I basically did a vision, a strategy, and a kind of a plan. And I took them through, if you like, the growth journey, what it would mean for them, what it would mean for the business, and basically just set the scene and explained what my role was, what Darren's role was in the new business, and what their role was.
Sorry, Steve, just before we move on. So you talked about you went in and assessed the business. Did you break the business down into, I don't know, land, staff, construction, whatever it was? Did you break the company down into parts to assess?
Yes, I did an end-to-end review, effectively function by function. And I basically did a complete review of all the processes that were in place. I did a complete review of what the management information we had, and where we didn't have it, I put in new KPIs so I could basically do a baseline assessment of where we were as a business. I had a bit of a roadmap in terms of the journey that I'd previously done its story. So I kind of knew what we needed, and I knew what the structure should look like and what that should look like as you evolve it over the future growth. I also did a review of our core systems. I mean, we had actually built our own ERP system, house building ERP system,
right,
which is in an Apple FileMaker system. It was actually very good.
Yeah.
So I put coins in at Stories, as most of the big builders have. But we actually had a good internal system that had been built over a number of years. So I did an assessment of that system and worked out what we needed to do to grow that system and develop it. But I think when you've done it once before, it's a lot quicker, if you like, to get to exactly what you need to do. You learn from your mistakes, but you've also got a bit of a roadmap to follow, where the first time around you fumble in the dark a lot more.
How long did it roughly take for you to go in, assess the business, and then start communicating your message?
About 4 to 6 weeks.
4 to 6 weeks.
And I was ready to go. And we basically had a new strategy. We had a roadmap for the next 12 months. And I'd set up a number of sessions with my senior management team just to basically start communicating around the strategy and around the key priorities. And we basically, within about 4 weeks, had started a fundamental review of the house type range.
Right. Okay. And then, so, did you say at the moment you're about 150?
We're currently about 150 now. We're expecting that to grow to between 200 and 250 next year. That's financial year 22. We're a calendar year. And we're expecting that to get to 500-600 units over the next 5 years. So effectively double in size over the next 4 years.
Okay. So if we look at that jump from 150 to 250 units, do you look ahead and kind of foresee what the obstacles might be? Is that how you operate? Or
yeah, I mean, very much so. I mean, to be honest, I should have been telling you today We were at 250 units, but but last year, just as COVID hit, I had 9 sites stuck in the planning system.
Right.
3 have come out, and we're on site.
Right.
I've got 2 which are going to appeal. Well, 2 are, that one's in appeal, one's about to go into appeal. I've got 1 site which we didn't get planning, and we're not going to get planning on it. It was more speculative. And I've still got 2 or 3 waiting to be determined now. And I've just added another 3 sites we're now working on planning applications on, which we'll be submitting in the next 6 to 8 weeks. So we really should have had the growth a year ahead of where we're actually getting it, but we're really been stuck in the planning system.
Right.
As we secured the land opportunities, we hit a really, really difficult planning system, which I think is been exacerbated clearly by COVID and going to virtual committees.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's a difficult one to foresee, COVID, to be fair.
So to answer your question, which I haven't answered yet, planning and land supply are obviously critical for further growth. We've got, I can get this to 250, 300 units with what I've got in the controlled pipeline now. I can probably get us to 350 units a year, but to go beyond that, I need to keep winning land, and right. So I've got to keep having a good bat rate in terms of land conversions to land bids. But it's very competitive out there.
Yeah,
And I haven't got a strategic land function at the moment, so pretty much all the sites were secured in the short term are from the open market and in competitive bid. A couple of one-on-one deals, but largely we're competing with a number of other builders for quality sites. So land and then getting them through the planning system quickly and predictably is a real challenge at the moment.
Yeah,
I've got the funding commitment from Henry Boots, so they're funding us towards that vision, which is great, because it's effectively internal funding with a small bank facility on top. So that's great. But the bit which was the most challenging in its stories, which we underestimated in the early years, but certainly didn't in the latter years, is it's all about the people and the culture.
Right.
Pretty much the biggest constraint, and I've put this ahead of land and planning, is effectively getting the right quality of people in the business as we grow and retaining the right quality of people in the business and doing that ahead of the growth plan.
Right.
And we underestimated that. Its stories, and I think if I'm being honest, we spent too much time worrying about whether people had experience or not, and not enough time worrying about whether they were a good fit for the business and that had the right character.
Right.
And we kissed a lot of frogs. You know, I mean, we recruited 400 people in 5 years. And we kissed a lot of frogs because we weren't very clear about what are the values we're recruiting against. Recruit character, you can train competence. You can't really easily train character. So I think I would do it differently this time, you know.
So in terms of that, so you've identified that. What's your process for overcoming that obstacle?
We've got a very clear set of values in the business and a very clear behavior framework. We're also looking at very much growing our own talent. So we've already put in place, I actually brought my group HR director from Story Homes with me here.
Right, okay.
So we're putting in place very much a strong succession planning. We've just rolled out senior management team training. So they're in phase 1 of a significant leadership training course literally as we speak. We're now, next year, we're rolling out, if you like, a middle tier training course. So there's going to be a huge amount about internal talent. But we also need to really create our brand profile and our company profile to help us attract people from both in the industry and outside the industry into the business, because the biggest challenge when you're grown, particularly in new regions, is attracting good quality people to take the risk to jump and work for an emerging business. So a lot of work about how we build our profile as a business, how we basically sell the future opportunity. The one thing a grown business can give is future growth opportunities. So it's very much about selling that into the market. So, you know, you can, there's a huge growing structure, organizational structure in the future, or if we deliver this growth.
Right.
So there's lots of exciting opportunities to get promoted.
Yeah. In terms of where I see it fall down is when companies can't attract the people, or they can't attract the right people, and the current team comes under huge stress and strain to deliver a target that is too big for the current team, which they have, and then people get disillusioned and move on from the companies. In terms of getting, to go from 150 to 200, does your corporate structure need to change significantly?
Not significantly for that jump. I think the jump beyond 300 units, it's a significant change. And we start, once we get to about 350, because there's quite a lot of reasonably quick growth coming through the Northeast region, we're going to devolve the structure into a local regional business. So we'll support the initial stages of growth before we've set up a regional business from head office. So the one thing I learned from stories was you need extra capacity in head office across your key functions, particularly your back office functions, to support the emerging region. And you need to build that capacity early. So they can spend a lot of time holding hands in the region with the staff that are all on the ground and make sure you're all over them in terms of supporting them, because the biggest risk is at the start of a new region. And, it's hard to attract the quality of staff until you've established yourself. So you're taking more risk in terms of potentially the quality of staff you attract into the business until the business is bigger. So you need that kind of support from head office on the ground in the new region. And I think I probably, once I went from being effectively the CEO of a business I could put my arms around to having three managing directors reporting into me, I lost touch, I think, with the front line of the business a bit.
Right.
You know, and you start seeing things too late because it gets filtered out before it reaches you. So I think one of the lessons I learned when we got to three mature regions in stories was, I need to spend more time in the regions, not less, even though I've got MDs running the businesses day to day. And I underestimated that, if I'm being honest. And I could have, I think we had one region which we had some serious challenges with because we made some bad senior recruitment decisions.
Right.
And I was too slow to see that coming because I was relying on the jungle drums inside the business for the messages to get to me.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest challenge, I think, of anyone running a business, you know, up to about 500 units where you're largely going to be one region. You might be one and a half regions, but you're going to largely be able to put your arms as a good CEO around the whole business and pretty much see all of the problems and make all of the key decisions. Once you grow to 600, 700, 800 to 1,000 houses and you've got regional structure in place, you can't do that anymore. You're effectively managing through the management teams and the MDs in those businesses. So it's how do you get a line of sight to the front line of the business and to your customers? And the only way you do that in reality is to be on the ground.
Right.
Taking a temperature check of, does it feel right? Does it pass the sniff test?
Right. Okay. That's quite a challenge. It's quite a challenge though. With everything else that you've got involved, or is it hard stepping, let's go back to the story. Was it hard stepping away from the business to become, I guess, more strategic and not be a doer and being a viewer?
It was hard. And I think, as I said, up to about 500, 600 units, I effectively did both. So I was very focused on future growth and the future shape of the business on the strategy end. And I was all over the operational side as well. And I thought as it was grown, I'd have MDs running it day to day, but I could still effectively oversee the operations. And I think the one role I would have recruited probably when we got to about 650 houses, I would recruit like a chief operating officer or an operations director to oversee the day-to-day running of the MDs.
Right, okay.
because I think it becomes too big a job to do yourself if you want to be very future focused at the same time. And we were looking at our fourth region strongly. So we were looking to grow into a fourth region,
right?
Which would have been Cheshire, in Manchester and Cheshire. Right. So it would have been, I think I would have recruited somebody to help me run the day to day in terms of operations earlier. And I've already got an operations director in the business I'm in now. Even though it might seem premature, I want to get that discipline into the business now.
Right. Okay. So in terms of your role in Stonebridge, do you look at 3 years, 5 years? How do you tackle it personally?
So we basically business plan current year plus 3, which is 4 years. So that's what I do for group, if you like. That's our submitted business plan. But I actually have a detailed 10-year plan.
Right.
So it's now clearly in terms of your sites, you're in a lot of A and others. So in terms of sites, it's not as meaningful. But in terms of what is the business going to look like in terms of its structure, the organizational design, I do all of that work in detail. So I've got quite a lot of detail of what I believe the business will look like in years 5 to 10.
Right.
And so I've got a roadmap, which I've done with my HR director, over what will the shape of head office look like over the next few years if we hit this growth plan, and how do we grow a region? And I'm seeing a region reaching maturity in about 6 to 7 years rather than less than 5.
Right, okay.
So we've basically got pretty much a structure planned around the growth that we've mapped out now. And then what we look at is how we know we've got these gaps to fill in terms of roles. So what do we think we can fill internally through promotion? And then how do we recruit the balance, if you like, which is obviously the vast majority of the balance of new roles.
Right. Okay. Okay.
So I think you can't look just 3. I mean, basically, it's dangerous looking at a house builder in less than 3 years because of the cycle. The land cycle. I know people will say beyond 5 years it gets a little bit meaningless. It might get meaningless in terms of what sites you're going to have, but it doesn't in terms of the shape of the business and potentially what you're missing now in terms of capabilities for a business of that size over 3 regions. So I wanted to do, I think the earlier do that, the better. The more you've got a clear vision over where the business needs to go to, the better.
Do you find that keeps you, focus driven, motivated?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, my biggest focus clearly at the moment is making sure we keep this pipeline of land coming in and building up a 3 to 4 year owned land bank. So I want to make sure we're keeping that land bank at a sustainable level, even though every year we're trying to grow the business.
Right.
So we've got to keep that land bank, we've obviously got to get more land secure earlier. And if the planning system is taking what it's taking at the moment, which is roughly 12 months for a planning application to be determined, clearly that we need that growth in terms of securing the sites quicker because of the delay to delivery. So a huge focus on that, but a huge focus on developing my team. You know, I've inherited a team which were relatively inexperienced, used to working in a smaller business context. So, you know, I'm spending about 40% of my time on people issues.
Right.
I don't mean performance issues. I mean people strategy and people initiatives.
Right. Okay.
And I think that will be the same over the next 3 to 5 years, possibly beyond that, because, you know, I underestimated the people side of it in the past. I wouldn't do that now. I think you've got to have the right people on the bus, the wrong people off the bus, and the right people in the right seats. To use a Jim Collins good to great analogy.
Yeah. In terms of let's look at the kind of the business in 10 years' time, but the industry as a whole has changed quite a lot. You touched upon since you came into the industry. What do you think the industry will look like in kind of 10, 15 years' time?
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about this. I mean, the planning environment is getting more complex. Now, I know there's this whole planning for the future consultation to try and make the planning system slicker and make it simpler. But the cynic in me suggests we've heard it all before. Right. And I genuinely think the planning system isn't going to get any easier. I'm planning on it getting harder. Mm. So the planning environment's getting tougher. I think there's going to be a lot of change coming, which ties into environmental targets and climate change. We've got to be zero emission ready in 2025 under the new proposed technical changes that are coming through that they're going to consult heavily on in 2023 on Part L and Part F, the building regs. You know, that's going to have a fundamental change moving away from fossil fuel heating systems, for example.
You're right.
And that is going to have a huge impact on the type of houses we're designing and building. I think that complexity, which is, it's just going to get greater as we head to zero carbon. And more requirements around new build being environmentally friendly. I think what we're going to have is a bit of a shakeout where we're going to have mid-sized players consolidating.
Right.
You're going to have more big house builders because they can carry the burden of the change and the risk and complexity. And you'll have a lot, probably more smaller builders offering something more bespoke.
Right.
And I think we're going to end up moving quite heavily and quite quickly towards modern methods of construction and non-traditional build.
How does, having you think about that and kind of knowing that these things are happening and they're going to happen, are you already looking at your supply chains?
Yeah, we are actually. I started sort of investigating, and we got somebody to basically do us a design on a timber frame solution.
Right. Okay.
As a first step, I mean, it's not quite offsite construction and prefabricated panels, but it's a first step, if you like. We're already thinking, how do you provide? We provide largely family homes. You know, our model is, our average square footage on private homes is roughly 1375 square feet as across the business. That's our average. So our average is a four-bedroom detached house. Now, right. It's a lot easier looking at modern methods of construction in higher density, smaller product schemes
currently. Yeah.
So we're looking at how do we potentially provide these family homes, but do it with non-traditional build.
Right.
So we're already investigating that as a potential solution. I mean, this is the direction of travel because it's getting harder and harder to get the right supply chain in place, particularly around key trades.
Yeah.
You know, it's becoming more difficult as more and more people retire out of the trades and there's not as many people coming through in. You know, there's a shortage of bricklayers. I mean, there's a shortage of electricians, plumbers, roofing contractors, scaffolders, and we're all fighting for the same scarce resource. And that can't see how that gets any better in the short run. Now, we're sponsoring apprenticeships within our supply chain as a step to try and help that so that, you know, guarantee they'll work on our schemes. At least in the short run. But I think we will be looking hard at potentially looking at different means of production and a different product.
Right.
And I think the environmental change will push us that way anyway.
Mm.
So there's huge changes coming in the next 10 to 15 years. It's not a question of if, I think it's a question of when. And, you know, we clearly won't be taking the lead on a lot of this stuff. I think we'll be following, seeing what some of the bigger builders are doing.
Absolutely. But I've got more resources to go and research.
They're having to take bigger risks than what we can.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. All right. Look, my closing question, Steve, if you could go back in time and start your home building career again, yeah, you know, what, or you could see yourself in the past, you know, what's the one piece of advice that you would give yourself?
Well, I've got two, but they come to the same thing, but they're slightly nuanced. So the first thing I would say to myself is slow down. So you don't need to try and do everything at once, you know? So slow down. The second thing I would say is don't sweat the small stuff. So, you know, basically when you go on a growth journey, it's going to be like going up in an aeroplane. You go up in a bit of a zigzag because there's a bit of turbulence. Just accept you're going to hit the turbulence. But So it isn't going to be a perfect straight line with a very smooth journey up. So except you're going to hit some difficulties, but what you have to do is make sure you learn from those difficulties and they don't break the business. So basically you need to have a learning organization, and you basically need to be able to keep your ears to the ground. I mean, the one thing, the most useful information I get is the in-house customer satisfaction questionnaires in this business. And I get copied in on every one that we get.
Right. Okay.
So because the best voice for any business is the customer. Because you might think you're great. The customer will tell you really how you are.
Excellent. Steve, that was really good. Really interesting. Thank you very much for your time. And have a good day.
Yeah, thank you very much. I thoroughly enjoyed that.
Take care. That was great. Cheers.
Thank you.
Catch
you
soon. Bye. Bye-bye.
Discover how to build your UK house builder business and attract the top 15% of leadership talent using one-to-many platforms, automation, and 24/7, 365 proven digital strategies before your competition. Be sure to subscribe for more podcasts from the Good to Great series, featuring leading voices from the UK house building industry, from small to medium businesses to leading PLCs. Don't forget to rate and review so that we can continue to bring you the best content possible. For more information, call 0203 800 1080 or check out www.hc-group.co.uk and book a client or candidate blueprint strategy session.